So I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for inviting me to represent state health departments in this discussion. It's sort of an impressive thing to have to do. What I'd like to do today is to talk through my own experience in California, and I'm also very interested in hearing from other state health departments and other project areas about how you've worked with evaluation and performance measurement in your own programs, whether it's during this session or during the conference or afterwards, because I feel like we're really co-creating a culture of evaluation in STD programs, and that's going to require us to learn from each other. So I think we're pretty good at reporting data when we have data in our STD programs. We report it well when we're applying for funding, when we're doing our progress reporting. We also have a lot of vocal experts that can drive sort of the direction that we go in our programs. And so there's a lot of people here who probably have a lot of opinions about the directions that we should go and whether or not certain programs are effective. Some of them may agree, some of them will not. Data is really the way we're going to be able to demonstrate at a state health department level that the work that we're doing is valuable and effective, or that it's not and maybe we should move to another direction. So I'm going to spend this talk discussing how we in California continue to try to institutionalize a culture of evaluation and moving in that direction. The four things that I'm going to talk about today are leadership, organizational structure, strategic framing as far as how you talk about evaluation with your staff and with your colleagues, and then using your data to actually drive the action and drive the programmatic decisions. So in thinking about leadership, you can really see reflected, I think, in a lot of the talks that are in this conference, that CDC is providing some leadership. The train is moving in the direction of more data, more evaluation, more accountability. And so we really need our leaders at state health departments to get on the train, if they're not there yet, and also for each of us to get on that train. And so I'm going to provide you with a few things that you can take back to your programs that I think really communicate a culture of evaluation in your program. But really it's going to start with each of you, and it's going to start with each of us to think about what are our personal challenges, frustrations, and limitations around program evaluation and performance measurement, and identify what are our training needs and seek out the opportunities to get trained ourselves. And then as we become cheerleaders, I'm definitely an evaluation cheerleader, and I think that the people around me get infected with that cheerleader evaluation is awesomeness. And so I definitely recommend that other people find that for themselves, and I think you'll find that other people will follow behind you. There are a few things that can be done sort of at the organization level that will help to demonstrate that evaluation and performance measurement is important in your programs. So a little bit about what we did in California. The first is training staff. And I have to say that if you want people to collect data, if you want people to come along with you on this path, then you have to let them know what it means, even at level where they're not doing the actual evaluation planning. And so communicating with your entire staff, training your entire staff about evaluation can be really helpful with that. There are existing resources. Dr. Thomas showed a few of them earlier in the presentation. And one thing that we did in California that really worked for us is used the training as an opportunity to make evaluation assignments. And so I developed a program improvement plan that I'm going to talk a little bit about in a minute, which was born out of a training that I attended in 2008 about program evaluation. And since I started training our staff, we've done 4 evaluation plans in the last 9 months. And so that method seems to work really well, and then you end up with a tangible plan at the end of the process. The second thing I wanted to mention is designating an evaluation specialist. And a couple of years ago, Dr. Heidi Bauer, who's the chief of our program, approached me and asked me to be essentially an evaluation champion because she saw that I was a cheerleader. And so I think she asked me to start asking questions. and start talking to programs and asking them, how are you going to evaluate this? What are you thinking about? What are your evaluation questions? And I really didn't feel empowered to go to programs, to go to people and start asking questions. And nobody really knew to come to me to ask questions. And so about a year ago, my title shifted. An evaluation specialist was included in my title. And now people come to me when they have evaluation questions, and I started doing trainings, and I'm asking questions, and there's an empowerment that comes just with that small change of having a title. Also, my time is dedicated 50% to program evaluation, and you all know California is an enormous program, and it takes half of my time. And so this means that lower resource programs could designate an evaluation specialist and not necessarily even use 50% of their time in order to really do effective work. Another thing that we did that may or may not be feasible in smaller health departments is actually created a section in our program that's called the Assessment, Monitoring, and Evaluation section. And this was a reshifting of existing staff. We did not hire any new staff to do this. And it shows at an organizational level that these are priorities in the program, and it separated it out from surveillance. It was sort of buried in surveillance and epidemiology. And this pulled it out, and I think that really communicated to all of us in the program, as well as to our funders, that this is a priority. So how do you talk about program and evaluation in a way that doesn't intimidate people or turn them off or make them feel defensive? And what I found really works is an approach that starts with curiosity, and I'd like to add humility to this. To come into the program, and I think it helps to have someone who is not necessarily a senior manager doing this, but somebody who is a peer asking questions and coming from that place of curiosity. The second thing that I found works for me is using evaluation data to focus on the systems that are impeding success. And what I mean by that is looking, you have an intervention, you have a program, it starts at point A, ends at point Z. Where are the breakdowns happening? What are the things that are not working along the path? And so that really takes the attention off of the individual who is passionately excited about their program and focus it on the systems that are in place to try to improve those. And then finally, and this was mentioned earlier, evaluate the program, not the person. There is definitely a place for assessing the whether your staff are meeting their job requirements and doing performance evaluation of your staff, but that should be clearly separated from program evaluation and communicated to staff that this is separate from program evaluation, so that they don't feel personally that the evaluation is defining sort of how well they're doing. This is real data from a program improvement plan that we did over multiple years. And this slide is looking at one of the retired performance measures. And on the y-axis, you see percent of primary and secondary syphilis cases that are interviewed. And the green line is an interview within 0 to 7 days. The orange is 0 to 14 days. And the blue is 0 to 30 days. And so this is data I was presenting to one local health department as part of, it's not a happy slide to present to a local health department. And so how do you approach this to have the conversation? And so what I did was I used the curiosity approach. I actually like to use the word curious because it says it communicates that this is not about something you're doing wrong, and ask them, What do you think is happening here? Talk to the DIS. What do you see here? What protocol changes may have occurred over this time? How have your priorities shifted? And talk to them and find out what the barriers are that aren't specific to the DIS, because the DIS are doing a really hard job and working really hard and are invested. And so in this particular health department, we had various levels of intervention. We had a very intensive level of intervention here and actually placed a state staff there to help them develop protocols, et cetera. So great improvement. I love this slide. It makes me feel really good about myself. And the little gold star, I included it on here because I wanted to point out there was one program where I forgot their gold star, and they let me know, and I realized this is really motivating people, and it was just meant to be sort of a fun little bling to add on to there. So as good as I feel about this slide, I'm going to pull out the California project area, and this is what the slide looks like. Zero change over the time. All of the resources I put in and all of the energy that the programs were putting in did not make significant changes. Morbidity was increasing over the course of that entire time, so we were not really seeming to have much of an impact. And so it took a lot of coaching to divorce my personal investment in this project from the reality of the fact that this program improvement plan was unsuccessful. And I really feel it's important for us to think about, in a business model, businesses plan for failure. Businesses include in their research and development budgets expectation that there will be success and there will be failure. And I think that we have to adopt a model like this so that we can, and measure what we're doing so we can identify when something's not working. But that I think that gives us a little bit more freedom to be innovative. So the last thing that I want to talk about is using your data to drive action. And the first action I think that comes to mind for me when I'm looking at data is, did we ask the right questions? Did we choose the indicators that actually answer the questions that we asked? And using like a continuous quality improvement approach is a good way, I think, for us to keep coming back. Did we ask the right questions? Did we measure it correctly? What could we have done differently to make changes? Let's do it and let's see how it worked. And using that continuous quality improvement model. Use data to make visible changes to your programs and communicate what those changes are so that staff can actually see that the data they're collecting is being used. On the other flip side of that is eliminating all of the extra data that we are collecting that are not helping us to understand the populations being affected or contributing to our programmatic decisions. Because I think we should be more fearless in saying, no, these data are not actually helping, and we don't want to collect it because it's taking away from the services that we could be providing. I think there's an important balance. So I just wanted to share for a brief moment how we use data in one program to make a significant programmatic shift. Thank you. And so we had we all test as a program where gay men in San Diego could sign up to receive email or text reminders to get STD testing in 3 to 6 months. And so in 2010, the entire campaign was based on outdoor media, print media, banner ads, trying to drive men to go to the website to sign up. We looked at our data. Clearly, this is not working. Nobody is registering. So we made a significant change to the project and began enrollment through the categorical STD clinic. And in that first quarter, we tripled the number of enrollments that we received. I'm not going to go into all the other details because I don't really have time, but I wanted to just summarize quickly to describe the four elements again. Leadership, be self-reflective, become your own champion and your own cheerleader for evaluation in your programs. Make changes to the organizational structure and include titles so that people feel empowered to ask questions and others know to come to them with their questions about evaluation. Be curious when you're talking to people who are working really hard on these programs instead of being punitive, and focus on the systems rather than the individual performance. Finally, use your data for action. Use your data to drive the programmatic decisions that you're making and communicate those to people when you make them. Again, I'm very interested in hearing from other programs, so please feel free to take down my contact information, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and I think it's good that they've invited a real amateur and dilettante in the whole area of program monitoring and evaluation to reflect on a few comments. And so I'm going to just share some comments from somebody who I don't claim to be an expert in monitoring or evaluation or quality improvement, but have had the opportunity to run some fairly large programs in different contexts. And some of the lessons, and sometimes hard lessons that I've learned, really echoes some of the comments that have been made by people who really have this as a responsibility and expertise. First of all, I've found that it's really important for everybody in the program to have a clear understanding and to articulate what is the theory of change that you're following. What is the results chain that you have in your mind? And everybody needs to be clear about how that results chain is going to affect your ultimate outcome. And then once you have that results chain, measure the key elements at all levels of the program. So that means from the field level to the oversight level to higher levels in the program, have everybody measuring and following the same processes and the same indicators. Make sure that you define the relevant denominators. There's too many denominator-free programs and denominator-free public health evaluation systems. If we don't define the denominators as they've done in the UK system, then you're just measuring effort. You're not measuring results. Every process has an opportunity gap. I like the idea of curiosity or other ways of looking at it. I think the idea of using punitive approaches to monitoring doesn't work. It's counterproductive. So when we think about where there's gaps, we should not think of them as failures, but think of them as opportunities or challenges for improvement, and use this as a way of iterating within the program. If a program element is not worthy of measurement, then is it essential for results? So if we're not measuring something, why are we doing it? So I think we had to do this very, very assiduously and almost ruthlessly, is to say, if we're doing a bunch of things that we don't think are important to measure, then why are we busy doing them? So I think that and the counterpart to that is, if you're doing something important, you should be measuring it. And everybody should be measuring it, not just at the high management level. Programs can and should measure much more than they do. I think too often we wait for external evaluators or researchers from academic institutions to come and measure things. We found in a number of our programs in India that waiting for an external evaluator is too late, it's useless, and program people get divorced from the whole process of evaluation. So we've actually integrated things like behavioral tracking surveys and other kinds of measures and other processes within the program, so that programs themselves are actually measuring things that generally we used to wait for external researchers to come and do that. This, I think, is a very basic concept, and that is, it's better to measure a few things very well and act on the results than it is to have a long list of indicators. Too often I've seen programs where external evaluation experts come in, they do a whole process of meeting with everybody in the program, and before you know it, you've got 78 indicators that you're measuring because everybody's added their list of want to have indicators. When we started a very complex, very large scale program for key populations, high risk populations in India, we started with 4 indicators. And for the first year, everybody was measuring the first 4 indicators. What proportion had been reached by at least one field contact? What proportion had ever visited a drop-in center? What proportion had ever been screened for an STI? And what proportion were getting enough condoms to meet their need on a monthly basis? Just 4. And everybody was measuring those 4 from 1,300 peer educators to the outreach workers to the managerial staff. Everybody was measuring those 4 indicators because they were seen as measuring the key components. If somebody's not been contacted, they won't be mobilized to access services. If they're not accessing services, they're not going to receive the STI screening. If they're not receiving condoms, they won't change their behavior. So, or they won't be empowered to change their behavior. So just 4 measures. And it was enough for us to drive change over the first 2 years of the program. Distinguish between measures of progress and measures of why. A lot of times we mix these two together. So for example, asking the question, what proportion of our population are using our key services? That's a measure of progress, or what we're trying to achieve. Measuring, are clients satisfied with our services? That's a measure of why. Don't start measuring the why unless you've got a problem with the what. And I think we often do that. We start asking these questions that don't necessarily relate to progress. If we have 95% of the target population using our services, then how important is it to measure how satisfied they are with the services? And yet we can spend so much of our time looking at how satisfied they are with our services when it's actually not scratching where it itches. And I'll leave you with a final comment, and it relates back to the whole issue of the denominator. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the British comedy Yes Minister, and you might even know this story from it. So the health minister was being asked to come and visit the hospital that had the best performance in the whole country. And so he came and he saw it was spick and span, all the HR systems were great, all of the treatment systems were great, and everything else. And so after being shown this, he said, "Well, I just have one question." And they said, "What's that?" He says, "Where are all the patients?" He said, "Well, if we had patients, how do you think we could perform this well?" So I think it reminds me that too often we measure efficiencies and some other performance things without actually measuring how well are we actually reaching targets and reaching performance levels. So I think that it's not rocket science, but it really is important to get these kinds of things right and make sure that the evaluation drives the program and doesn't get in the way of the program. Thanks.